To order, this is a meeting called by the Suffolk County Board of County Commissioners to discuss the engineering assessment that was done. A couple of things that I would like to mention right up front in the beginning. I know that this is a very heated topic. At times, we all can become very excited with our points of view. What I would ask is that we try to conduct this meeting devoid of emotion. If we can, I would ask that there be no cheering or no booing, anything like that. And if there is cheering and booing and disruption from the crowd, I'll have to stop the meeting. And if it continues, we'll have to adjourn the meeting. So we'll have to work really hard to make sure that we do this right. As always, at commission meetings, we have never, we always give opportunity to talk. The opportunity may or may not present itself this evening. If it does present itself, what I would ask is that you might limit your comments to new and constructive comments. Okay? We're going to start off the bat then, Todd. I need to pass the microphone down to you, and let's go through the engineering assessment just a little bit. Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is a meeting. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and thank you for reminding
me. All right, I'll put it right in your face, Todd.
All right, perfect. Just to start off, I just want to explain to everyone that may or may not know the reason this has been looked at, the remodel is the existing buildings. There's nothing wrong with them structurally. They're all sound. They're both sound buildings, but they just do not meet hospital grade codes. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. Sometimes they don't realize that not everybody is part of the loop. During this last assessment, we've been back and forth a little bit on. There's been a lot of conversation about single construction, single phase construction. It's kind of raised some people's eyebrows. I want to touch a little bit on that. The reason being is if you was to try to phase this, the cost would go up. Not only that, it's a health and safety issue for the people that's trying to work the clinic while construction's going on. And the temporary steps that we'd have to take in order to make it a safe environment is going to be expensive. So that's the reason they viewed it as a single phase construction, which would mean that one or the other clinics, I'm not going out on the limb, that's not being converted to a car would have to be shut down for a long period of time. The one that's being converted to a hospital would have to be shut down. So if it's built here in Pinedale, those of us here in Pinedale would have to drive to Bay Pine to the clinic during that time period. And of course, like I say, the biggest reason is safety and cost. For this. Speaking of costs, there's been a lot of conversation about how the costs have remained the same. I just need to clear the air that in 2015, the cost was based on a 9,100 and some change square foot addition. The cost in 2017 is based on 4,000 square feet. So even though the costs are oversized building, and people need to understand that.
Todd, just real quick, 9,100 feet was the first.
That was
2015, and now it's based on a 4,000. What? How many square feet?
4,000 even.
4,000 even,
yeah.
Square foot.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're getting half as much space at the same cost.
Correct. Pretty much the same cost. At the same time, I know there's been people aware of it. There was a draft RFP drawn up some time ago, and it was based on 4 million construction dollars with a $2 million equipment cost associated with it. So it's right around that $6 million at that time as well. So.
Okay.
I think that's all I have.
Gentlemen, any other questions for Todd at this point? We asked the healthcare district and Chairman Clark to send us some numbers on owner-provided equipment, what it would cost to fill this critical access hospital. Chairman Clark, can I ask you just a couple of questions? Oh, there you are. All right, good deal. So my first question is, the total that came back to me was somewhere around $250,000. As I read through that, it looked like it had, tables, chairs, art, clocks, things like that. But what I did not see in that were IT, phone systems, security, signage, medical equipment, stuff like that. Do you have a number on that sort of stuff?
If you didn't have it in the document that I sent you, then you probably don't have a good estimate on those parts.
On those things. Okay. What's that?
You didn't give us a lot of time.
I understand. It was very, very short notice, and I do apologize for that. So would it be, could we make a guess on something like that, how much that stuff might cost? I mean, are we looking at another $1 million? Are we looking at a couple $1 million to fill this?
You could probably go up to double of the cost of the
Okay.
Take that 250 and change and add another 250.
Okay. At our last commission meeting, Chairman Clark, you asked that we come up with a decision tonight, one way or the other, right?
Yes.
Okay. And my question to you then was, you mentioned that there might have been some other options that you will have if the commission chooses not to move forward with critical access hospital.
There are always options.
Okay. Are you at liberty at all to share any of those?
No, I
wouldn't
share it with you right now. If we
okay. All right. Thank you. At this point, I would like to turn the time over to Commissioner Burnett.
Can we get that?
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, I would like to discuss with the Board of County Commissioners a potential option that I have been looking at for the last couple of 2 weeks.
Why don't you go ahead and step off to the side there, Dave?
Bear with me. I've got, I'm not the techno wizard. According to the ERG survey that was furnished in May of 2016, if the Rural Healthcare District is not able to obtain the COB designation, 85% of the random respondents selected ER services as the most important service to maintain. 100% of the respondents from the Pinedale, Lee County, and Marlton Town Councils, as well as the respondents from the Rural Healthcare District Board, the Sublet Center Board and the Board of County Commissioners made this selection as well. In my 28 years of practice in medicine in Sublette County, I can validate this as a people's top concern. From the beginning of the concept of the Critical Access Hospital until the present, the Rural Healthcare District's main concern for this designation is that this designation would allow them to capture more reimbursement from CMS, Medicare and Medicaid, and this would then alleviate some of their budget concerns. The 2016 legislative session passed Senate File 257. Which was signed by the governor and became effective into law on July 1st, 2016. If we can.
You might have to point it toward that.
This is the bill. Okay, and I'll try to, as I run through this, bear with me. But this bill allows for freestanding emergency centers to be operated by a hospital district or a rural healthcare district. And this may be done as a standalone effort or as a collaborative effort with the Wyoming Hospital. Both would allow for an emergency center at a location physically separate from the hospital. So if we could just give me a minute, we'll go through this bill. I don't think I need to read it. But basically, the purpose of this was to allow rural areas or smaller areas that could have an agreement with a hospital to set up an emergency department. And as stated later in the bill, this does allow a rural healthcare district to do it independently, which is what's referred to as a standalone facility, or they can do it collaboratively with another hospital. As it states in the definition, it's a facility operated by a Wyoming hospital at a location separate from the hospital. A rural healthcare district that provides 24-hour, 7-day-a-week care for life-threatening emergencies. This just gives you what the Wyoming statute 35-2-901 is what this bill was incorporated into. As stated above, the act becomes effective July 1st. Now, I'd like to make some comments about this because this concept of a freestanding emergency center potentially offers several advantages. And I want to emphasize the word potentially because some of those determinations would depend upon whether you were looking at a freestanding unit versus a collaboration with another hospital for what's called a provider-based emergency department. So, and these are in no particular order, but, and there again, the word potential is not up there, but the potential advantages, number one, this would be a turnkey operation with no construction cost involved. If you read, and I can go back to the bill, I've got a copy of the bill here. It specifically says that there's no license required for operation prior to June 30th, 2019. It also says that no freestanding emergency center shall require a separate license under this act when operated by a provider-based emergency department. Nonetheless, on or before June 30th, 2019, freestanding emergency centers operated by a hospital district or rural healthcare district shall not require licensure under this act, provided there's a hospital transfer agreement. Depending on how this was set up, if in fact you have an agreement to do a provider-based service with another hospital, it would allow you to recapture those increased monies from CMS or Medicare or Medicaid for after-hour calls. If you were to go to a freestanding emergency center working with another hospital or with another group of physicians, it would allow your local doctors to focus on comprehensive medical care, same-day care, on an 8-to-5 basis with no call. I think that having been in this position long enough, I think that it's fair to know that that would be a major advantage in terms of recruitment and retention of mid-level providers as well as physicians. Importantly, if the agreement is reached with a hospital and this can be worked out, the potential is that this would allow reimbursement for EMS services for people taken to the freestanding center. And that should be third-party payers, not players. Conceivably, with this option, by eliminating the burden of the emergency department, it could reduce the healthcare district's operation costs as well as losses. We all know that emergency services are not a profitable venture. Number six, well, I got to reduce operation cost losses. Number seven goes back to what the previous commissioners had put on the table in terms of one of their reasons to go forward, and that is that there would be no harm to the sublet center. At the same time, it would allow a 24-hour observation period, so if somebody was admitted dehydrated or with a neurological injury that needed observation or checks, you can still do that in a 24-hour period. Number eight, I think, is important because with cost savings, perhaps it would enhance the ability to keep both clinics operational, which I think is a key issue, particularly in the southern end of the county. In addition, number 10, it would be enhancement to the community. If, in fact, you went with a freestanding emergency center that was there to provide 24-hour coverage, in addition, they could, during that time frame, they could provide urgent care services, which would be a plus not only for the community, but a plus in promoting the community in terms of future growth and endeavors. This week, I have talked with Representative Eric Barlow of Gillette. Representative Barlow is the House Chairman of the Health, Labor, and Social Services Committee that sponsored this bill. He indicated to me his willingness to help pursue this option if so needed. In addition, I've also talked to Neil Hilton, who is the Vice President of the Wyoming Hospital Association. He in turn talked to Eric Barley, who's the President of the Wyoming Hospital Association, and they both indicated willingness for the Wyoming Hospital Association to help explore this option as well. And finally, over the last 2 days, I've had a couple of conversations with Laura Hudsmith, who is the State Survey Agency Director and the Administrator for the Wyoming Department of Health. In the course of our conversation, we discussed this freestanding emergency center option as being both pursuable and viable option for our county. And we both agreed that the challenges of pursuing a freestanding emergency center would be less than the considerable challenge faced to operate a general hospital, which would be required prior to the application for a critical access hospital designation. I know that if we achieve critical access hospital designation, we will become the last county in the state to have a hospital. I also know if we pursue the freestanding emergency center, we could be the first county in the state to do so. I would rather take a chance on being first than taking a chance on being last. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do you want to take any questions on it?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Burnett. Thanks for your hard work on that. I will go ahead and open the floor for any questions regarding the freestanding emergency room, that's the presentation that Commissioner Burnett has just brought before us. Give me the microphone.
Yes, Dr. Burnett, have you done a financial analysis showing the opportunity cost of doing the freestanding hospital versus the opportunity cost of doing the critical access hospital so that we could compare the two options?
You know, absolutely not. My position has been one that is trying to provide a viable option for the rural healthcare district to consider. So the answer to that is no. If you want to look at what I think would be incurred costs, you could argue or you could state that if you want to satisfy CMS requirements with a provider-based merger, then certainly you would have to at least consider the $550,000 for the MEP update at one of those clinics, because it would have to be hospital grade. If you decided to do a freestanding emergency center as administered by the healthcare district by itself, you would lose maybe the opportunity to have that increased CMS recapture, but you would not have the expenses involved in changing the facility. It's my understanding that the emergency rooms are turnkey operations that be used as is.
I also hope this microphone sticks with me here. I also might ask you to state your name and please stand.
My name is Jack Hunter. My question, Dr. Burnett, is it's all well and good to look at the initial cost of developing a freestanding emergency versus what it might take to push the cost forward. But at the end of the day, when we look at the long-term impact of the revenue that's going to come back into this county from being CMS qualified and being able to get all of that revenue back from Medicare for years and years and years out, right? There is absolutely can be no comparison financially that makes sense for us other than to bring that revenue into this county. I would challenge you as part of your further analysis of this to show us how it makes sense to do what you're suggesting and leave all that money on the table 5, 7, 10, 8, 20 years from now.
You know, Jack, having been involved in medicine for 30 years or longer, and having dealt with CMS, if you're going to be looking into that question, I'm going to say that it's exactly a crystal ball that says, with the way Medicare and Medicaid is going with cost reductions, that I want to bet my business on what Medicare is going to be doing 5 years from now. As to the question of loss of revenues from CMS, you're also, if you look at this option, going to be looking at loss of expenses associated with ER services. And I can tell you, nationwide, if you look at emergency room services, without the urgent care component, they're not money-making operations. And I am not elected to be in that position of looking into this. I would certainly be happy to cooperate with the healthcare district, with the Wyoming Department of Health, with the Wyoming Hospital Association, if they wanted to investigate into this further.
Thank you. There's one back there.
My name is Chauncey Goodrich. I just had a question as far as the future growth of Pinedale. Is this something that will fix a now problem or a future problem? And the idea of the hospital, if this town and community and county continues to grow, which I assume that it will in the past, is this just a fix now thing or the standalone, would it actually grow and be able to sustain itself throughout the future?
You want to go ahead and take a stab at that?
You know, in my opinion, looking towards the future of medicine, it's moving away from hospital care, period. It's looking more towards outpatient surgery, outpatient services. But I am not here, nor do I want to venture a guess and take on the responsibility of that decision. And if you guys have any other comments on that, this mic goes all ways.
No, that's good.
Hi, my name is Susan Barney, and Dr. Burnett, you just said that there's a shift from hospital to outpatient services, and you're absolutely right. And you also said that one of the trends is Medicare reducing services, and you are absolutely right there too. I mean, healthcare in this country is facing a very, very difficult problem because, you know, my generation, the baby boomers, are expected to live less than previous generations because we're more obese, we're eating more saturated fats, more, you know, all kinds of things. But some of the things that are being done is that there's a shift more towards, away from specialist services, more towards wellness and, you know, diet, lifestyle factors and things like that in order to bring costs down, to make people healthier so that costs will come in lines. Because right now, people have to spend more money. You know, people are dying earlier, they're getting cardiovascular disease earlier, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that we also need to factor in the fact that we need to shift towards including more lifestyle services, and that goes in line with this trend that Medicare is going. And then also from shifting from hospital to outpatient services, that fits in the same vein. And I don't think that should be used as an example for why we should avoid taking the money from Medicare. I mean, Medicare, the critical access hospital is a law. It's a law to provide health care to rural areas like ours. And the law says that if you're in a rural area, Medicare will reimburse you 101%. And so it's not exactly the same as Medicare everywhere, because we would be under a different law. And so therefore we would have higher reimbursement than a regular clinic.
Thank you. Just need to make sure that folks realize that Commissioner Burnett did some research on an option. The healthcare district is not willing to share with us their options. This was an option that Commissioner Burnett found, and it could be an option without expending millions of dollars. So if he doesn't have your answer at this point, okay, do some research on your own also. Okay? We have a couple more.
I'm Donnie Todd from Pinedale. There has been some mention of concerns about Medicare, but we have to remember that Medicare is not the only entity that reimburses for care for patients. And private insurance companies reimburse up to 300% more to hospitals than to clinics, which is more than double what Medicare reimburses. So we also have to keep that in mind as another source of revenue that we have to think about, and how it would relate to the freestanding emergency center. I don't know, but I do know that we'd be much better off than with the private insurance reimbursement with the hospital.
Thank you.
Do you have a response? Yeah. It's on.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
I would like to ask Dr. Johnson his observations on this after spending more than 40 years in the community doing this.
No, you need the microphone. Yeah, you do.
Soft-spoken.
No.
Anyway, 40 years of running an entrepreneurial clinic here, and folks all know where it was, and I was the entrepreneur of it all. We didn't have any problem. When all this came up, I checked with the lady who ran my insurance billing, and we had no problems getting our Medicare emergency room reimbursement rates taken. We were Medicare hospital rates, because when we put the emergency room on that clinic, we put it into Medicare
emergency room construction rules, meaning there we had inspections to make sure that stayed that way. So we didn't have to go through all sorts of shenanigans to milk the Medicare department for more money. That broke even for us, and so I think that's something that maybe should be done at both of these clinics, to get a Medicare construction inspection and see what needs to be done to upgrade the emergency departments to Medicare outpatient standards, which is what Dave's talking about. We never had, to my recollection, a fatality within the clinic on an emergency basis. People either were deceased when they got to the back door, or they got deceased when they got to the hospital. To my knowledge, the emergency department or the emergency transfer people did not have any problems en route. So, and that's over 40 years. So I really can't see why we need to have, and I'll have to admit, I have never been in favor of the call from the very beginning. I think it's an unnecessary expenditure in order to milk more money out of the federal government because of the operational policies that are going on in the last few number of years. And I think it would be, my choice would be to renovate the way the clinics are operated, and rather than jack up the office calls and worry about not getting adequate insurance reimbursement, to look at coding, to look at the procedures that are being done within the clinic or not being done within the clinic. There's a lot of stuff that, I mean, I hear stuff probably weekly about stuff that could have been done here, but is being sent out for various and sundry reasons, which most of the time I don't have any business investigating. So my personal feeling is that Dave's idea about a freestanding emergency departments in both ends of the county should be investigated closely, with an engineering assessment of the Medicare building standards for those facilities, and they are quite a bit higher than just an outpatient clinic. The inspectors come around frequently to make sure that they are staying there, that the lab equipment is up to date, that all the operators are certified to do what they're doing, and then also make sure that the emergency transport system is well-funded and currently operational on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. You now have a lot of contacts with AeriVac, and they're used very frequently, and that's great because I've been a party to one of those. I'll let you know that. And the time I had my cardiac event until the time I was in a cardiac unit was probably about 5 hours, which was pretty fast. And that was in Idaho Falls. So I think that Dave's idea is a good idea. I think it needs to be looked into, but I don't think it's the commissioner's job to do that. I think it's the healthcare board's job to investigate that and investigate the difference in reimbursement that comes from a Medicare certified emergency room, not just an emergency room that's tacked onto an office facility. Is that what you want to hear?
Thank you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I'm going to allow a few more comments. Remember that we are looking for new and constructive comments.
I'm Dr. Albrighton, and my concern that needs to be evaluated is that the emergency room portion of the county's expense is not something I see that another entity wants to just take on and lose. So I'm not sure if we'll have any takers from our surrounding healthcare entities who want to come and run this outpatient money-losing emergency room services. We do fairly well on our outpatient clinic operations, but the ER portion of our budget is substantial, and I'm not sure if anybody will have the goodwill of just...
Thank you.
Dr. Kaplan, so we have done research. We've had 32 months since we first suggested the word COP. We've had three different financial audits that we've paid for with the commissioners. And the only options that have come out of their mouths have been the critical access hospital. Okay. St. John's Hospital paid out of their own pockets a study last year to look at whether or not it would be financially viable for them to come down and try to take over our care, for lack of better words. And without the critical access hospital, it didn't make financial sense to them. Okay. So with that being said, the biggest money loser for a rural area is emergency services, 24/7 emergency services. And to have this option thrown out this late in the game, I again feel like this is just going to prompt another survey, another study, and in the meantime, given the original evaluation that was done by iDaily that says that with the critical access hospital designation that the district will be able to recapture $4 million a year from Medicare. This is not bilking the system. Sublette County pays around $8 million a year to Medicare out of everyone's paycheck. It's 1.45% that you pay out of your own paycheck. Your employer pays another 1.45% to Medicare. Last year, we captured $485,000 from Medicare. We left $7.5 million on the table. With a hospital designation, if we can capture $4 million a year, it's still not perfect, but it's a hell of a lot better than $485,000. And in fact, that $3.5 million difference is about the shortcomings of our budget as the mill levy has decreased. So every year we delay, another $3.5 million is left at Medicare, Medicaid. These are dollars that we've already paid in taxes. Why in the world don't we want those dollars back? That doesn't make sense to me. We've already paid these taxes. These aren't new taxes. These aren't taxes we're asking to increase a penny tax on retail. This isn't bed and breakfast tax. These are dollars we've already spent. We've already paid them. And some other state is more than happy to spend our Medicare dollars that we're leaving with Medicare. The critical access hospital is the only route to capture these back. If you're going to hire a private entity to come down and try to run an ER or two ERs, I guess that wasn't even said. Is the plan to have one privately or independent emergency room, or are they going to have one on each end of the county? That's important, I guess, to the people in South County. So that hasn't been answered. I didn't hear that.
Well, yeah, that. It's not a.
Dr. Kaplan, that's not a decision I would make. I would think that would be a decision for the Rural Healthcare District to make. If I were looking at it from a standpoint of cost, I would say that you would just make one functional ER and run into the county. But there again, that's not my decision.
Right. So again, the people of South County think this is the answer. It may not be. So choose wisely. But if we're choosing to hire private entities or the Rural Healthcare Board, if we're choosing to, if this option of the critical access hospital, if we don't get this and we try to do some outside conglomeration with someone else and they put up half the money, guess where half the profits are going to go? Not back to Sublette County. So be careful of what way we go, what way we choose. The way that makes the most sense has been proven four times, three by audits that have done, been paid for by Sublette County, one paid for by Teton County Hospital. And if you want answers to medical questions, ask the medical experts. We've done that. DZA, Ike Bailey, I can't even remember all the other alphabet soup, but we've hired four different, there have been four different audits. They've all said about the same thing. So this is a really critical juncture for this county, and we need to make the decision wisely.
Hi, I'm Micah Tam. And I have a lot of respect for you, Dr. Burnett and Dr. Johnson. But I have to say that bringing this up at this time, I think we all came here hoping for a decision, hoping for something tonight, and we're throwing a stick in at the last minute here at this race. This has been going on for a long time. I think we're all exhausted, and I know I am. And I think what Dr. Kavanaugh just said is very important. The data, the studies, and I think if we're looking at a freestanding ER, we're looking at prolonging this again and again and again. This sounds to me like voting for that. We're looking at another year of studies while our medical clinic here is going down the tubes and we're losing doctors. And in losing doctors and good quality care with people who want to stay here, the Sublette Center gets harmed. That's how I feel. I feel like we don't have a good Sublette Center, we don't have good care if we don't have good doctors. And I'm just so, this is just worn me out. Just hearing that we're getting another option. I think if we'd known, oh, let's throw options on the table tonight, I don't think Laura was ready for that. And I think it's unfair to say, oh, here's an option that to me feels very much like a mediocre option to fill or compromise for everyone who was against the CAH. That's what I feel. Thank you.
I'd just like to respond to that briefly, Mike. And that is, it's my understanding that Laura does have some options, and she's not willing to discuss with us. I was not trying to prolong this decision-making process. I was trying to be helpful in terms of throwing out options to move forward.
And
thank you for your comment.
One other thing that we need to keep in mind, this isn't a last-minute option either. The legislature passed this a year ago.
Go ahead. Up here, Dave.
Thank you very much. I'm not a member of your community. My name is Aaron Metcalf. I'm with a construction company out of Salt Lake City. We specialize in rural health care in Utah, Idaho, and Wyoming. And we built a number of projects in Wyoming just recently for long students in Appen, Snow Valley. This is an option. It is. But the issue is that it's going to be a privately financed option. There is not a hospital around that's going to, you know, to just invest four to six to who knows how many millions of dollars to build this facility and then run it when they're having the same issues that you're running into right now. Just recently, Rock Springs, the Memorial Hospital of Sweetwater County, canceled their contract with services with the Green River Hospital, which is the Castle Rock district, and they're only 15 minutes away. So this is something that I'm sure the Wyoming Hospital Association is excited about and should be looked into, but you're going to be losing local control, and plus you're going to be paying over 30 years possibly for this facility. You're going to be paying private interest, not a bond, where the public bond where you're paying much lower interest rates. So ultimately, this might be costing you much, much more over the long term. Yeah. And any other...
Just clarify which you're talking
The standalone clinic. This is the standalone.
Please, one speaker at a time. We'll get to more questions and more thoughts.
Anyway, that's just, and plus construction costs. Even though Wyoming is experiencing some economic downturns, construction costs are still going up. So year after year, all the costs are going up. So a decision would probably be need to be made pretty soon. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kendra Cross. Glad to see everybody out here. It's such an important topic for all of us. I know we're all feeling pretty strongly about it. One thing that I'd like to point out is how complicated healthcare has gotten, as we're all aware of, and that some very experienced and smart people have been working on models of healthcare for rural counties for a very long time. And it has come to be pretty much an understanding that a CAW model is pretty much the best way to go. So with all this experience, all this research, all the studies, plus all of the money that we've put into this research and studies, how can we, as a county with not this healthcare expertise, think that we can solve these kind of problems? These are big, complicated problems, and it seems like we have the model laid out, we have the answer, and I really propose that we go forward with this.
Thank you. I'm going to take a turn here. I have a question. So if we decide, we'll make a decision tonight. I don't think we have a problem with doing that, Chairman Clark. So if you need a decision tonight, I don't think there's a problem in doing so. If it is decided to move forward with a critical access hospital, who pays the bill? Where does the money come from?
So my immediate knee-jerk reaction to that, Andy, is $3.5 million. We're now in month 32. I think we've just kind of crossed the $10 million amount of money that we've left on the table since August of 2014. So that $10 million, through the indecision and not being able to go ahead immediately, is probably going to end up costing this county $10 million. And so my answer to you would be that, yes, the county, if they're willing to pay for this, that would be my answer. And the reason would be that the same reason that you guys decided to pay for this engineering assessment versus we offered to pay for it last spring to have it done. But you wouldn't give us the guarantee that we could go ahead with the critical access hospital, so we weren't really willing to take $40 million out of our budget to do so. You decided to go ahead with the engineering assessment this year, and you paid for it. I would say that in the 3 years, because understand it's going to take probably another 3 years to actually get to critical access hospital designation. If we would have gone ahead in August of 2014, we would start reaping the benefits probably within the next few months. But instead, we've been dragged through 32 months of audits, surveys, all the other hoops that we've had to jump through. So who should pay for it? I would say probably the richest county in Wyoming.
Back in the back here. Please, no applause.
I'm Debbie Vickery. I live here in Pinedale. And that is a question I think that has been a concern for a lot of people is who's going to pay for the cost? So the Rural Healthcare District feels very confident that this is going to be good. It's going to be a good moneymaker. Can the county loan the Rural Healthcare District the money for the COP, just a normal promissory note, and have the Rural Healthcare District pay that back with interest?
That's been successful.
Yeah, right.
Good question. Can't answer it for you tonight. Do you want a yes or a no?
That's not very nice. It's not very professional. It sounds like a threat. Just make a decision,
it was not meant as a threat, Mr. Hunter. I asked if you wanted a yes or a no tonight.
I'd like to try and answer that question. I apologize for my shoelessness. I ran out of the house without my proper shoes. So. Anyway, how many of you have a background in finance? On the board? Nobody?
Pardon me? What was your question?
How many of you have a background in finance?
Have a background
in finance. Or evaluating investment opportunities. How many people here are against the critical access hospital because you're afraid that the county can't afford it? You don't know where the money is going to come from. All right, my name is Susan Barney. I have an MBA in finance from a top-tier business school, and I'm a little nervous right now. I have 30 years of experience in evaluating investment opportunities. I worked at an investment bank, I worked at a regular bank, I worked at a hedge fund where I was making $8 million investments. You know, I worked at a Fortune 500 company, and I'm currently a small business consultant where I work with technology companies to help build business cases for them to go to venture capitalists and get financing. So I have expertise in evaluating business opportunities. I've studied financial projections. I've built financial projections. I do market analysis. I do all that kind of stuff. And I'm also now a director on the World Health Foundation. And I have a bias. My bias is that I have a 78-year-old mother who has high blood pressure, and she gets a Prolia shot, which costs $500 if she gets it down here because we're not a CAW, but it's free if she goes up to Jackson. And last year, my dad had cancer, and he needed a lot of services. And so healthcare in this county is very, very important to me. I also had cancer last year. So I have a bias. I want us to have good quality healthcare because with high blood pressure, my mom could get a stroke and her survival is dependent upon getting care very quickly. So I surveyed some people, tried to find out what their concerns were, what their fears were about the critical access hospital, and I did some of my own research. One of the things that I heard a lot from people was, well, the business model for getting the critical access hospital is Medicare. In 1996 or 7, a lot of the hospitals and healthcare was leaving rural areas, leaving people like us in the dust. And we are the third least populous county in the nation. So Congress was very concerned about that, so they created this critical access hospital law, which said that if you become classified as a critical access hospital, Medicare will reimburse at 101% of reasonable expenses. And that helped ensure that small communities like ours would have care when they needed it. So right now, we don't get reimbursed for the full amount of Medicare. Like with my mom with her Prolia shot, it's $500 if she gets it done at the Barbleton Clinic. It's free if she drives up to Jackson because they are a critical access hospital. So one of the concerns that I had was, this is a bad idea because Medicare is going broke. Well, technically Medicare can never go broke because it has a constant stream of income coming from people's paychecks. But it is true that Medicare Part A, which is the part that deals with hospitals, is gonna have a revenue shortfall starting in 2028. At that point in time, it will only be able to cover 89% of its obligations. That goes mainly because of the baby boomers. And it goes up to 79% by 2050, and then it starts going back up to where we're in the black. And it's about a 50-year period. Obamacare fixed part of that. They extended it by, covered about 12 years of it, but we need to figure out how to cover that other 50-year period. One of the options that Paul Ryan in the Congress has been suggesting is that we privatize Medicare. Now, that is definitely an option, but it's actually not a very good one because Medicare is extremely efficient. And Medicare's administrative costs are 2% of the overall program. A private health insurance cost, their average administration cost is 17%. So in order to cover a 21% budget shortfall, they want to that would increase costs 15% over what it is right now. A better option would be to increase the amount of money that's taken out of our paycheck by 0.04%. That would cost someone making $35,000 a year an extra $10 a month. That would cover the entire 20-year shortfall. And I have a hard time. There are other options as well. That's just, you know, one that would be easy, that would be efficient, that would allow us to do the most with our dollars. I don't think that, given how powerful senior citizens are as a voting bloc, I don't think Congress is going to risk privatizing Medicare. Another? Okay, so the main thing is how are we going to pay for it? Okay, so what we would do is we would go out, the counties and the cities of Marbleton, Pinedale have all agreed to give a little bit of money, even if they don't. Let's assume worst case scenario, and they're not going to give, you know, a couple $1 million in total. So then we would go to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and we would get a below market rate interest loan in order to build the hospital. And what we would have is, first of all, we would have the $4 million extra money coming back into the county for services that are not getting covered. My mom's Prolia shot, instead of driving up to Jackson and having that $500 put into the Jackson community, having that, you know, paying a salary for a nurse up in Jackson who goes and spends her dollars in the Jackson community or his dollars in the Jackson community, that money would stay here. Other services like would be expanded in the hospital. For instance, respiratory services. Currently, there's a certain percentage of the population that get respiratory services that go out of the county to do that. Those monies would be captured. Like, we just funded a new CT scanner, and right before that, it just got put in a couple weeks ago, and before that, about 50% of our CT scans, the doctors were referring them to other places because you could get better imaging quality at lower radiation dosages, which was really important, especially for the kids. Just this one newer CT scanner with lower radiation dosages is just going to bring in several hundred thousand extra per year, just that one machine. So, you know, once we start adding these new services that you and all the other people in Sublette County are already getting, instead of driving to Jackson or to Rock Springs or driving down to Salt Lake, you can get that here. Now, another big concern is the Sublette Center. I think, you know, I looked into this, and I think that there's a case to be made for the presence of the hospital bringing more business to the Sublette Center. There's also a case to be made for a shade of gray where they compete. For example, my dad was down in at the Huntsman, and he had surgery at University of Utah. And after this, he'd been there and recovered enough in the hospital, they said, okay, we need to send you off to rehab. And they were talking about coming back to the Sublette Center. But they ultimately convinced him, instead of putting him in an ambulance and driving him 4 hours up here, that he should go to the center down there at University of Utah. So there will be small operations here where, you know, Medicare and other insurance companies say you can only stay a certain amount of time, where then the insurance company will force them to push them off to a place like the Sublette Center. And in that case, you can make an argument that having the hospital here would actually increase business to the Sublette Center. Now, the flip side of that argument is that there are shades of gray where somebody could spend the night in the hospital or could stay in the sublet center, and the hospital might win out. Well, that's, I think it's a neutral. You know, there are going to be cases where it increases visits to the sublet center and cases where it doesn't, and I think, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see. You know, I have gone through the financial analysis, and quite frankly, not getting the critical access hospital scares me more than doing the critical access hospital. And not only that, but by delaying it, we have already, it has already increased the cost from a financing perspective by $1.4 million. Because while we have been waiting and having another, you know, study after study after study, gradually the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates. There's, in June, they're expected to raise interest rates again, and this will increase the cost, the financing cost, from $1.5 million up to maybe, you know, $1.75 million or even $2 million. So the longer we wait, you know, he said, the gentleman over there said that the longer we wait, construction costs are going up. Well, the longer we wait, finance costs go up as well. I analyzed a lot of the objections that I heard to the critical access hospital, and it's now on the blog on the Rural Health Foundation. That's ruralhealthfoundation.org, and it has all my references, you know, where I looked at this. Oh, one of the other things that I didn't mention was a lot of people say, well, we shouldn't do a critical access hospital because critical access hospitals across the country are going out of business. They're being shut down. And that is absolutely true. Absolutely true. However, most of them have characteristics that we don't have. There's three organizations that study critical access hospitals. One of them is in North Carolina. They study rural healthcare in general. Another one is a company called iVantage, which does an annual review of the health of critical access hospitals every year. And another of them is the Kaiser Foundation, Kaiser Family Foundation. In 2014, iVantage noted that the ones most at risk tended to be in the poor rural South. And it noted that Wyoming, Utah, and another state, I forget what, which, were the strongest in the nation. Now, in just recently, the Kaiser Family Foundation evaluated the critical access hospitals that had shut down. And what these three organizations have found is that there's three main reasons why these critical access hospitals have shut down. The first is that they're too close together. When Congress created the law in 1996 or 1997, they said that you had to be 35 miles away from the next hospital. Well, a lot of these rural communities got waivers and said that they were, there's a term that I forget what it is, but they said that they were necessary for the community. And when the Kaiser Foundation did an analysis, what they found was that these hospitals were, they had, like, all the ones that they analyzed had two hospitals within a 15 to 20 mile radius competing for their business. We don't have that situation. You know, it's 70 miles to the nearest hospital down from Big Piney. It's 70 miles down to Kemmerer and 100 miles up to Jackson. And it's probably maybe a little bit closer here, but during the middle of the winter, you know, the roads could be closed. So we don't have that kind of competition. The next reason why these hospitals closed is because a lot of the private people with private health insurance, like if they worked in the oil field and your company was giving you insurance, those were the more profitable patients. And in these markets where the critical access hospitals were 10 to 15 miles away from each other or 15 to 20 miles away from each other, the people with private health insurance would go outside of the system and spend their money elsewhere. The third reason was that they were in states where they didn't extend Medicaid. Now, Congress is talking in from CARE, do you pay CARE, Ryan CARE, they're talking about taking that Medicaid, the money that they offered to the states to expend Medicaid, and Senator Barrasso was saying that one of the things that, he would like to see is that taking that money and giving it to the states to administer it themselves. So even without that, our financial model shows that we can be profitable. Okay, I'm wrapping up. That's it. That's actually it. So I apologize.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please, if you would hold your applause, please. Commissioner Bowson would like to speak.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask this question again. I've asked it repeatedly, and I'm hopeful that maybe Laura or the administration does have an answer for it now, and that is based on the conversation we had with Mark Cross when he was working as a facilitator between the county and the district. We became aware that what's referred to as the tubes of expenses, that industry says a healthcare district should be operating under. This district was way beyond outside that what was called, referred to as tubes of expenses in regards to administration. It was also mentioned by Mark Cross that the district needs to develop a viable business plan that would take that into account. And I guess my question is, do we have anything?
Yes.
Short answer.
Who would like to provide the short answer?
Linda the whole show, the healthcare administrator for the Rural Healthcare District, commissioners. If you recall, Commissioner Bausman, Mark Cross added an addendum to that comment that said the most critical thing for Sublette County was to get the critical access up and going, and then at that point go back and review those tubes of expenses that you are referring to. So yes, we heard that, but yes, we heard the other piece that there's going to be a lot of work to do as we make this a very successful, viable model for Sublette County. Commissioner Nelson, I also want to address the question or why didn't we look at this option when it came out about 18 months ago. We actually had the same calls that Dr. Burnett is referencing with Laura Hudspeth and Eric Foley, the president of the Wyoming Hospital Association. At that time, we were told that there was a lot of regulations that still had to be developed. A critical piece that Dr. Burnett did mention was the cost-based reimbursement. Cost-based reimbursement is driven by Medicare, CMS. And there is a whole set of regulations that goes with that, not developed by the state of Wyoming. So we have been following this closely, but through the 32 months, it continues to be, it goes back to the critical access hospital being the right model for Sublette County. Because we are looking at not just reimbursement in the ER, but lab, radiology, our ambulance, all would be impacted by this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, any comments down the line? Have the microphone down.
Yeah. One more question, and I've asked this question in the past and have yet to see a plan developed that would address what's referred to as out-migration. I've had numerous people come to me and say, here's why I chose, I will no longer go to the clinic in Pinedale, I go to Jackson. And in order to recruit patients, if we go forward and build a critical access hospital, somehow we have to convince patients that the quality of health care is improved to where they will make the decision to come here and not go out. We call it out migration. What is your plan to address out migration?
Yeah, give it back to me. Loosening up that again. All the way back.
following up to that question, that also seems to be a repetitive question as we've gone down this journey. So what we do know is that certainly as Sublette County makes that leap and moves from family practice clinics, that there is a level of trust that we will need to establish with the patients and the community. We know this from talking to other critical access hospitals. So we know that that work will be there. We also do understand that with 10,000 plus visits through the clinics each year, we do address a handful of concerns, and we're very proud that we have a mechanism in place to visit with these people. We recently have started some public forums, both in Marbleton. We recently had one in Pinedale. We are willing and open to do what we need to do to provide the best health care in Sublette County. And we have a great team that is willing to address that. The other thing that I want to comment is that there is out-migration, and part of it has to do with services that are outside of our area. I appreciate the comment regarding the shot scenario, because we have heard several of those. And this is something that could benefit the residents of Sublette County. And then lastly, I just want to mention, with those out-migration, at the same time we have in-migration, because we have over probably 1,300 new patients a year. Those are people that have not used the clinics in over 3 years. That's a strong message as well. So we're ready to roll our sleeves up and get to work when we get that approval.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, yeah. As of last Tuesday, we had a county commissioners meeting, and Commissioner Woman, Ms. Clark, was there and requested on two counts, one, to deed over the rural health care buildings to the rural health care board, and the other one was to give permission to build the car. And after thinking about this for quite some time, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move not to deed over the clinics to the Rural Health Care Board and not to give permission to build the car at this time.
Is there a second?
Why?
I'll second that.
The failure of health care is now on your shoulders, Matt.
It has been moved and seconded not to deed the buildings over to the rural health care district. And please let me finish. And not to grant permission to build the critical access hospital. Any further discussion from the commission?
Why are you in the way if they don't want money from you? Why are you in the way?
I'd like to call order, please.
Yes, please.
I think your motion was to not consider the rule, or not approve the critical access hospital at this time. I have a problem in our discussion tonight, because I originally came forward trying to look at other options available to this. It bothers me, I'm sorry if you don't agree with me, but it bothers me somewhat that apparently the Rural Healthcare District has other options they're not willing to discuss with this county. At the same time, they seem to be insistent that regardless of what options they exercise, that we foot the bill for this. So I'm of opinion that despite the 32 months, that I'm not ready to make that decision now. And I'll say one other thing. We've talked about the 32 months that have passed since we've encountered this. I find it a little bit alarming that in 32 months, you can't come up with a more complete equipment list based on what we've asked other than what was turned in. I would think in terms of planning, that's a shortcoming as well.
Any further discussion?
Is he going to amend the motion for not at this time, or is he going to vote on what he said?
The motion stands, and it's up to Commissioner Rawhauser to either amend or just stick with your motion.
Stick with my motion.
Stick with his motion. Been moved and seconded.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries 5-0.
Whoa! Yeah, good.
Meeting is adjourned.